Hello and welcome to episode 63 of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm really over the moon to share this interview with you today. My guest is singer and songwriter and one of my personal favorite musicians in the world, Mike Doty. And you're going to get a chance to hear from him about how he creates his music and actually hear some of his songs in this interview today as well. So I am really, really jazzed for this one. I'm also really excited to tell you guys about Up for Probiotics. Up for Probiotics is the sponsor of Motherhood in Hollywood, and I'm so excited to be able to work with them because I truly believe in the products that they offer. If you've ever wondered what a probiotic is or does, this is a great way to check it out and try it. Go to motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the Up for Probiotics image, and that will take you to Up for, where you can learn more about how Up for Probiotics can make a difference in your gut health. It can also help if you're suffering from any urinary tract issues, poor digestion, a weakened immune system. They can all benefit from the use of probiotics. Go now, motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the Up for Probiotics image, or you can also find Up for in your local Target store. They have a variety of probiotics offered for anyone from kids' age all the way up to seniors. So check it out. Up for Probiotics has been making probiotics since 1979. And I want to tell you guys about the new Lansinoe Smart Pump. It is the first breast pump to use Bluetooth technology. That's because it pairs with the Lansinoe Baby app to track pumping, automatically record the date and time and duration of each pumping session. It is such a helpful tool for new moms. If you're about to have a baby, want to have a baby, or you've maybe just had a baby, definitely go to motherhoodinhollywood.com and click on the Lansinoe image, and that will take you right to Lansinoe, where you can find out more about their new Bluetooth smart pump. It's completely customizable for comfort and to help moms get the most out of every pumping session. As three pumping styles, eight adjustable suction levels, and it's easily adjusted with the touch of a button. Definitely go to motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the Lansinoe image, find out how the Lansinoe smart pump can work for you. Finally, there's a smarter way to pump.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Okay, everybody. So I am super excited today because I'm going to skip the mommy monologue that I usually do in lieu of a very special guest that I have in studio. Mr. Mike Doty is here with me today. Hello.
Hello. Hey, thanks for having me.
And
what a lovely home you have.
Thank you so much.
This is literally the nicest podcasting space I have ever been in.
That's so nice to hear, because I worked really hard to kind of put it all together and like be a profesh, even though it's in my home.
Yeah, I mean, but it looks like some place that human beings would actually live their lives.
Live.
It's not
right.
Like an egg crated foam hole in a basement. Yeah.
I actually like took some time and invested into it, so I'm glad you approved.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I'm kind of shocked, actually.
I also want to let everybody know that there's another guest with me here today. My husband Chris.
Hello.
is going to be like co-hosting this interview for a couple of different reasons. One, because Chris used to be a radio DJ and
many
knows
years.
Far more about music than I do. Even though I am a big fan of yours, he still is like the expert in music. And I know he also has some questions for you. But the other reason is, and for those of you who've been fans of the show for a while, you know that we recently celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And one of the things I wanted to surprise him with for our anniversary was having you on as a guest.
Oh,
yeah.
For
really?
My podcast.
Yep. When did you find out?
During our anniversary trip.
Yeah, in Maine.
Oh,
yeah.
I actually, what I did was I printed out what looked like a Ticketmaster kind of ticket.
Yeah.
I put your picture on it. I put like a fake barcode on it. And I was like, you know, Mike Doty live. And it was like in the Motherhood in Hollywood studio. So he opened it up and was like, oh, cool, Mike Doty. And then he was like, what?
We are going to need to see that barcode, though.
Right, I know. Just to let
QR
him,
code
let us
scanner
in.
On my phone. And
so you are basically my anniversary gift to him. Is that weird?
Glad to be it. Very happy to be part of the process.
I'm so happy.
because we've both been such big fans of yours.
Oh,
your
thank you so
music
much.
Has been the soundtrack to our lives. And I'd say that, I know that sounds super cheesy to say, but it has been, since we started dating, because I was not familiar with your music until Chris introduced me to it. And now it's a staple in our home on Saturday mornings when we're cleaning house or playing with our daughter or when we're on road trips. It's such a big part of our lives. So this is such a thrill for me, and I know it is for Chris too.
Thanks so much. Very flattered.
No, thanks for coming.
And that's the end of the interview. Thanks so much, guys. That's all we're doing. No. I have lots of questions, so we're going to jump right in. First of all, I want to talk about, you have a new album coming out in about a month, right?
In October. October 14th. It's called The Heart Watches While the Brain Burns.
Great title.
And it's from Marc Maron, actually.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The other podcast.
Yeah, podcast of the two in this
that
world.
That guy.
Yeah. No one's ever heard of him. No, wow. I'm just kidding. We listened to the single, and it has a little bit of a country feel to it.
Is that
your Memphis vibe, do you think?
I mean, it just kind of fell out. I met a woman when I was touring in England and totally came on to her way too strong. And she fled. She left skid marks.
Oh, no.
No, I can't blame her. I look back at the text, I'm like, oh my God, like the basics of trying to flirt with somebody are all, missed on this. But then I wrote the song, and I wrote it sitting in a bakery, literally in my head, and then got back to the dressing room and got a guitar
and cranked it out.
Yeah, and when you write stuff in your head, you don't really know what it's going to feel like until you sit down with a guitar. And I sat down, I was like, well, it's kind of a country vibe.
Yeah, it does. I'm wondering, do the other songs, are they going to kind of feel like that too, or?
Oh gosh, no, not really. I mean, there's a lot of that kind of guitar sound, a lot of the bass sound, but it's all over the place.
As I tend to be. And your living room tour that you're in the midst of right now, this is sort of the second leg of it, right? Because you've been doing the living room tour for quite a while.
Yeah, all summer, yeah.
And what are you mostly playing, Stellar Motel songs or a little bit of everything?
No, I'm doing a little bit of everything. I figure out the set list as I go along. Basically, like, I just try to not play. I try to alternate major and minor keys, and I try to not play songs from the same album back to back.
Yeah.
And that's, other than that, I just sort of play it as
it lays.
Does
it change every night, or do you just kind of, do you have a set list that you'd go by, or?
Well, I mean, there's stuff that, I mean, there's recurring songs, but the order changes every night.
Because you probably have to keep it interesting for yourself too, right?
Yeah, totally.
It would be kind of monotonous to play the same song.
Do you take requests at the shows?
No, not really. Not really. Sometimes, like, because it's the question jar show, so people put questions in a jar before the show, and sometimes they'll have a question relating to a song, and then I'll play the song.
Okay.
So I don't know if it worked out beforehand, so it's easy enough to just...
We went to one of those shows that you did here in L.A. when you were playing with your bassist.
With Scrap.
With Scrap, yeah. And it was at, I think, the Cornet or the... We cannot remember the name of the theater. We should have Googled that.
Was it just the two of us?
It was just the two of you. And you had a jar up on stage. It was about four or five years ago.
It was a while ago.
And it was just you guys up on stage just having the best time.
Yeah, it was really
It was
good.
A very packed house. Cool.
Alternating, asking or answering questions and playing songs. Yeah. Played some stuff off. I think it was right as Sad Man, Happy Man was coming out.
Sure.
Or something that. Because you were talking about you rapping on your new album, and that was new for you. That was fun.
Yeah. Rapping, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But Scrap was doing this for him. Unfortunately, he had pretty major health crisis had to fly home. So he's doing great. He just had to fly home and deal with it.
So are you by yourself then now for the rest of the tour?
Yeah, for the rest of the tour, which is just this last leg, which is like a month.
Do you get nervous going into people's homes, or are you kind of used to it by now? Because I would feel very nervous because you don't know what environment you're walking into if you've got like a crazy stalker fan or like...
I'm not nervous, but I'm very defensive, and I'm very brusque when I come in. I'm like, "Hi, how you doing? Where's the room you're supposed to put me in?"
Because they're business only.
Just sort of communicate like I need like the time.
Yeah.
Because like 45 minutes before the show, I need to not. I'm not even like performing some kind of ritual, but I just need to be by myself, and I can't get distracted. So, frequently. people have you in their home and they want to sort of talk to you for a while, and you have to make it clear that, like, you know, I got to be alone for a little while, mm-hmm. because we just show up like right before I play, me and my merch guy,
yeah.
tour manager, Jack.
I would imagine that there's a feeling because your tour is so intimate and you are going into people's homes, mm-hmm. and you're right there with the audience, that there's a feeling of they want to be friends with you.
There is. And I've taken to saying every night that, you know, okay, so one of the things I got to tell you is, at some point during the show, somebody's probably going to want to just start a conversation and just be like, oh, I'm glad you played that song. I used to listen to that at work a lot. Yeah. You know, just really like someone will start a conversation. And I was just, please don't do that. And inevitably, someone will do it anyway.
Right.
And you'll have to go, that's actually what I was talking about.
Right, right.
And, you know, I would get really angry when people just talk to me and, like, just think people had boundary problems, mm-hmm. but eventually I was like, no, it's like there's something endemic to the show.
Yeah,
that does
well,
that.
It's a very intimate setting. Like, I assume when you leave here that we're all still going to be good
friends. Well, we
that
are.
Every
we
time
are. We definitely are.
That every time you come back to LA, you're going to be like, I'm going to call up the Brookers
this
and
is
see
my
if they want to hang out. Right, our
Thank
home
you.
Is your home. But I would think that there's an intimacy there for sure that you
oh,
that
sure.
people want to. Want to hang out with you and get to know you. Like, we're best buds. He's singing my songs that, like you said, I've always listened to.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, you have to, because it really is a show. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing it basically because of how it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other format where you can just play without a PA system where you're
yeah.
just, like, playing into the air. And that, when it's good, it's just absolutely gorgeous.
Are you doing any vetting of the people before you go?
I work with a company called Undertow.
Okay.
And they, I wouldn't have done this if they hadn't yeah. have come to me and were like, look, you can actually,
I was like, yeah, you're ballsy.
You know, make your mortgage
yeah.
doing this. And,
yeah.
you know, it's not just like you're going around the country being weird.
Right.
But they know, they do all the things. Like, they, you know, they're like, okay, there needs to be a room with a bathroom.
They have a list of requirements.
Yeah, and like, what's parking like in your neighborhood, and who are your neighbors, and like, so
yeah.
they dial it in
yeah.
very well.
Because we actually talked about, we were like, when we heard you were doing that, we were like, oh my gosh, we should do it here. We
yeah.
have a great space for it. And then Chris goes, do you really want a bunch of rando LA people
no.
in your house?
No, you don't.
I was
you
like,
really
no,
don't.
I don't. No, I don't. I was like, I would love Mike Doty to come to my
yeah.
house and sing.
And our friends.
For our friends.
Yes.
But
yes.
I don't yeah. want to, I don't want 50 or 60 of LA's
yes.
most randoms.
And that is a large part of their job is going, okay, are you sure you want to do this? Are
yeah.
you sure you know what you're doing here?
What you're getting into.
I mean, what you're getting into.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So that being said, have you had... some really weird experiences at these shows, or
I had a bad experience at a yoga studio in suburban Ohio where where people just got drunk and wouldn't stop talking.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was like, they just weren't like, I was stopping between songs and being like, hey, please don't talk. And they weren't listening. Just they're like, they could have been at any bar.
They didn't care.
Yeah. And in general, people have been really appropriate.
That's good.
So that was the only one that was really a disaster.
Are you familiar at all with comedian Tig Notaro?
I certainly am.
Have
yes.
you seen her show, her documentary where she's doing stand up and going around from house to house?
No.
It's fascinating.
It
and
is.
It kind of reminds me, I was thinking Mike Doty should do this because
yeah.
she put out the call for people who want to do stand-up, see her do stand-up shows at their house. And she's been everywhere from like rural Missouri
right.
to, you know, I think she was in Michigan and there was a big storm. But she literally stands in people's living room and does her stand-up
yeah.
show.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fascinating to watch. So I wondered if like... You should do that. You should have someone like I'm going to sign you up with a TV deal.
I'll
I'm
do
saying.
It. I'll totally do it. Absolutely.
Yeah. It'd be fascinating. And
yeah.
It also made me wonder if maybe artists are kind of trying to get back to a grassroots connection with the fans. Is that what we're seeing more of? Because there's the pressure to fill out massive stadiums or even like big venues. Like we've seen you at the El Rey Theater, which
Beautiful
is not
theater.
A huge venue, but it's a good size
yeah.
for LA.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if the pressure to fill out, to sell out shows like that when you're an artist and you're up against like Beyonce and Jay-Z and like huge mega artists.
Well, I would say there's plenty of people that want to come see me,
mm-hmm.
but they all need to get babysitters. Mm-hmm. They all, if you know,
we know.
They, yes. You know, there's a ton of work involved, mm-hmm. and the live music business is almost hostile mm-hmm. to people that really have to get it together to go see shows.
Yeah.
Because you know, you show up and it like it says 8 o'clock, but really it's 11, and yeah. you know, who's the opener? When are they going on? How long are they playing? And you know, the biggest problem is talking. Like I. You know, like you can literally see on some people's faces like, wow, we drove downtown and we got a babysitter and we're staying up late. And there's some obnoxious guy in the back that, you know, it's be easy enough to collar him and kick him out. So a huge part of it is just being able to play for people that are behaving appropriately mm-hmm. and who are getting their money's worth.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wonder then... where you talked a little bit about the music business being kind of hostile. Like we recently went to, and this is not hostile, but we went to see Adele and we had to get a babysitter. Mm. We had to pay like $30 for parking.
Right.
The tickets, an expensive night.
The tickets themselves were crazy expensive because it was at the Staples Center downtown. Right. So it was like a big ordeal just to go to her show. Mm-hmm. And then the people all around us were crazy singing, going nuts. And uh-huh. The guy in front of us was literally flailing. Like flailing around.
Wow.
And we just were like, we just want to hear her sing. But yeah. when you're in a big venue like that, you know, and the same thing in a smaller one, you can't.
There's the flip side of that there too. Yeah. I mean, they also got their babysitters. They also spent the money.
Right.
If they want to flip out, they bought the right to do that.
I know.
Well, I mean, there is
sort of,
to some degree.
It is like if you got 100 people, 99 of them want to talk and get drunk and not really pay attention. That's cool. The mm-hmm. people have spoken. Fundamentally, I'm working there as the bartender is working there. If it's 99 people who want to be quiet and listen, and it's one guy
that wants to get drunk,
and that guy is so assured of his rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I ask a bar to kick somebody out, they're reticent to do so, which is crazy to me because they're losing customers left and right doing that.
Yeah.
And I always get an indignant email that's like, don't you know you were in a bar? It's like, yes, I know. And everyone else came to hear something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it really is, you know, like people who have money to spend are getting shut out of this for the weirdest reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't seem that hard to have, you know, a venue that, well, you know, like City Winery in New York is amazing. Mm-hmm. And they have one in Chicago as well. Triple Door in Seattle. There are venues that are like people go out and they get dinner and it's like a groovy vibe and the show starts when it's supposed to start. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no weirdos that are being allowed to completely, you know, run riot. But it does seem like a lot of promoters in a lot of places are just ignorant of the money they could be making.
Yeah. Yeah. By not like taking a stand or stepping in and just handling the
situation. Just by really, even if you're not going to shut up the drunks, just be like, the show starts at 8. It starts at 8.
Draw the line.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Also for you, you have to get onto your next venue. So you have to probably stick to your schedule. Do you leave? I'm assuming you leave right then and go to your next, when your show's over, you go to your next.
Well, I usually stay overnight. And
I've been loving your Facebooks and your Instagrams of all of the random places you're going and seeing like all of that fun stuff.
That's half the fun.
And I heard you say one time in an interview that you're interested in, hanging out more with comedians and like the lifestyle that comedians have. Why is that? Tell me a little bit more about that. And do you hang out with any comedians?
I did. When I lived in New York, which is up until about a year and a half ago, I moved to Memphis, Tennessee. I did a lot of comedy shows as the musical guest, and it was just absolutely fabulous. The audiences are there to listen. Mm-hmm. They're really stoked.
Yeah.
And I just vibe with comedians because they're solo performers, mm-hmm. and there's sort of a thing about what they're trying to do, which is akin to what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, too, about that move, because you are New York seems like such a big part of you and your musical history and all of that. Was that a tough decision for you to make to move to Memphis, or did it seem just like this is the right time? I got to go.
I mean, honestly, it's been about 10 years that I've been getting ready to leave.
Wrapping your head around it a little bit.
I came there as an 18-year-old in 1989, And so I've been there for a long time. You know, and it just around, you know, the turn of the century, I was like, you know what, I you know, I want to own a home someday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wish I could own a car. And, you know, I love living in New York. There's nothing about the lifestyle that, you know, that I wanted to, you know, get away from. It's just a question of always thinking about money every moment. Yeah. Like everything has to be monetizable and everything's a hustle, and it's exhausting. Yeah. And it got worse and worse and worse as the years went by.
Do you feel like moving to Memphis then has alleviated a little bit of that stress? A
tremendous amount of stress.
Wow, okay.
And also I've for the more sort of experimental stuff I do that's kind of outside of the realm of like the Mike Doty whatever it is, has found an audience. Like people mm-hmm. are just interested and they come to see stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, in New York, everyone, you know, you have to like persuade people to go see stuff. And,
yeah. Because it's such a hassle to get on the train and, you know, all that
stuff. And yeah. And there's just like a, you know, I guess, you know, people are spoiled for choice. So they choose not to choose.
Yeah.
I mean, really, yeah. I think that is a thing that happens. It's a catch 22 of having a lot of options.
I know you have questions. Yeah. I don't want to like hog
it.
No, go ahead.
I was just talking, what kind of experimental stuff are you interested in doing in Memphis?
Well, it's I have a thing. I do an all improvised show with a band called Spooky Party that is me and a guitar player named David Kauser, a drummer named Steven Chopek, and then I guess we're the core and we get other people to fill it out. But there's that thing. I do a thing that kind of sounds like the old German progressive band Can,
okay.
But it's based around a system of hand signals that control who enters, who stops playing, how loud you are, how soft you are, based on some stuff that John Zorn used to do in the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and yeah, it's not, I mean, you look at it and it's not like an intellectual exercise. It's very mm-hmm. much, you know, like a groovy thing, but it's not, you know, end with 27 Jennifers and then Janine. It's like, you know, it's all, you know.
You have done a lot of experimental stuff, especially, you know, you mentioned like rap earlier.
Sure.
You've done some of that. And I think I remember reading that one of your influences when you were younger was Public Enemy.
Oh, big time, yeah.
And that absolutely. Was actually one of Chris's,
yeah.
too. Chris was a big...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
he doesn't changing. Play actually any music, but... He can
I listen
jam.
To a lot.
He listens to a lot, like a champ. So I think that's so cool, and what an interesting place to come from, especially like seeing your songs and how they've developed over the years.
Sure.
That's so cool.
I came to New York when I in the middle of a tremendous golden age of hip hop music and house music,
mm-hmm.
sort of the Afrocentric stuff. Public Enemy and then Tribe Called Quest and Jungle Brothers.
All that East Coast.
Moni Love. Yeah, all that stuff. The Native Tongue stuff. So it was just seeping
out
of everything.
You might like that show that we just watched. The new Baz Luhrmann
show.
Oh, yeah. The Get Down.
The Get Down.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Not yet, no.
I think you might like it then. It's very...
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Really, and it's about that, but it's like a stylized kind of version of the origins of hip-hop in like Brooklyn and stuff like
Baz
that.
Baz Luhrmann only did the first episode of it.
Yeah,
but it's very Baz Luhrmann.
Right,
if you watch it, you're like, this... Yeah, definitely.
It's a fun show.
And then from there, it progresses with other directors, I guess. But yeah, the music is just phenomenal in it.
I want to talk about your songwriting a little bit. Because you are... And I was kind of like listing out all your titles: singer, songwriter, poet, guitar man, you know, all of that stuff. Which, by the way, please sing the Elvis Guitar Man song. I think that would be cool, especially if you're in Memphis. Have you ever heard Elvis's song called Guitar Man?
Oh, I think I have.
Guitar Man. I'm a big Elvis fan, so.
Oh, there you go. Well, I live in Memphis, so I know from Elvis.
Yes, absolutely. But when I was kind of going through a list of all of your titles, I was thinking about your songwriting in particular, because your lyrics seem so personal, and especially a lot of your love songs, if you will. I don't know if you like to call them love songs.
No, that's fine.
But but there's a longing in them, like a heartache.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where is that coming from? Is it based on like a glimpse of someone you see, or like you were saying earlier, a text that you, you know, like a missed opportunity, text flirt? Like, where do those come from?
Well, that, I mean, that the thing that comes from the very specific situation, you know, a feeling in the moment, is relatively rare. I guess I'm sort of just drawing from a general experience of yearning. It's generally fictionalized.
Saw you in the subway station, shining with strange light. Girl, you're like a weird vacation. I'm gonna make you mine, make you mine. But then I fell out on the streets to write a love song. Your face stared out of me from an ad.
I don't. I'm not looking to document my life. You know, I think you know, it's got to be truthful, but not factual.
Mm-hmm.
So, where did I hear that from? Somebody that did not make that up. But
we won't tell. We'll just
don't
pretend.
Tell. Don't tell. We'll just broadcast this to the world.
Because it seems like there are some songs that are like about a specific person.
Yes, they kind of are, but it's yeah, like the album Haughty Melodic was all kind of specifically about one ex-girlfriend who mm-hmm. I used to use drugs with, and it was kind of about the drugs, and I sort of was talking to the drugs as much as I was talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
But that all came from journaling around the time I got clean, so that was very much what was on my mind. That was pretty sort of raw experiential stuff. But even that, I don't believe that you have to adhere to, you know, a reportorial version of your life.
Right. Like it has to be about this one girl yeah. that I met or.
Yeah. Like I've worked with, you know, younger writers, songwriters, and, you know.
Like Taylor Swift. Have you.
Like Taylor Swift.
Have
yes.
you been working with Taylor
very
Swift
good friend
on her.
Taylor Swift, yeah.
With, on her, all her very personal yeah.
oh, yes.
dating albums.
Oh, yes. Clearly.
That one song was about you, actually.
I was actually the one that dated John Mayer. That was
oh,
completely,
it was you.
Yeah,
oh,
so she
wondering.
Was just drawing on my experience.
funny.
But I younger songwriters would be like, well, I'd be like, oh, well, you could say this or you could, you know, say this. And they're like, but that's not what happened. Well, it doesn't matter what happened.
Like
what matters is the song.
Yeah.
yeah. Oh. You know, and the song will sometimes surprise you with a story that you didn't know was there. Mm-hmm. And you have to follow that rather than you know, adhering to the narrow focus of, you know, just the facts.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds cathartic, actually, like through the
yeah.
songwriting process. Very
to a certain degree, yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Are you dating anybody right now?
I am not. No, I broke up with somebody about a year and a half ago. It was
you don't have to share too much. I'm just
no yeah no I shouldn't share too much. It's just been I've been like journaling a lot about it, so I have like, you know, a spiel I could go into, but I think I will leave that to my journal. But
yeah.
Basically, like she's still in New York and I live in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh.
I think is a lot of the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, I read somewhere that I did a lot of reading about you and nerdy research.
Oh,
so
dear.
I swear I'm not a stalker. I just do my research before people come up to my mic.
Well informed.
But I read somewhere that you were kind of, not against settling down, but there's a part of you that didn't want to have to be responsible for other people or like a family or have someone relying on you. And I don't know if maybe it was just that time in your life that you were feeling that way or.
I mean, I'm open to everything, but the way my life is the way my life is. And frequently I'll get into a relationship and then I'll have to go out on tour for a couple months. And she'll be like, oh, that's fine. We'll do this together. And I'm sure it'll be hard. And, you know, and she'll call a lot and I'll call her a lot and a lot of FaceTiming. And then we'll get to the end of it. And it'll be like, oh, we got through this together. That's great and fabulous. And then there'll be another one. Uh-huh. And she'll be like, oh, I guess we can do that again. And then there'll be another one, and then another one, and then another one. So,
and eventually it's just too much distance.
Yeah. I've also, like, I've dated a lot of artists that are broker than me. So, like, I think if I got married to a surgeon, I would be fine just staying home and taking care of the kid and, you know, writing songs right. in the, you know, 2 seconds I would have to myself periodically.
Are you meeting a lot of surgeons? Because I might know some people. No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I know a bunch of broke actors. So.
Oh, yeah. See, that's, so yeah. That's the thing.
I'm not a good source for you. Well,
in Memphis, I live in, like, the groovy people neighborhood, Midtown. Like cool, the hipster yeah. neighborhood, mm-hmm. but it keeps occurring to me that I need to go to the Starbucks by the hospital.
You know, there you go.
And just like be there for yep. about shift change.
Get to know the rotations. Yeah. Get to exactly. know the rotations.
Exactly.
Yep. Hey, whatever works.
Look for women in scrubs. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be cool to like. I mean, I'm very much open to that. I just have not met a person with whom it is realistic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like I. You know, I would be.
But you're not against it. You're not like, I never want to get married. I never want to have kids.
Certainly not. No.
Or it's just, or like, I mean, and it's okay if you are. No judgment. I mean, I'm judging a little. No.
No.
But I just didn't know if it was something where you were like, that's not for me, or it's just not for me at this time.
It's not for me in this circumstance. I mean, it would really depend on the relationship. I'd love to get into a like mm-hmm. a marriage committed relationship. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, you know, it has a lot to do with money. It has a lot yeah. to do with the fact that like,
yeah.
you know, in a marriage, I could take on a more supportive role probably. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm the person making more money, I have to be on the road mm-hmm. 7 or 8 months out of the year.
Yeah. Sorry, do you want to?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you can jump in anytime.
Go ahead.
I wanted to talk about your rock opera, Revelation.
Sure.
It gave me goosebumps
for
multiple reasons.
Excellent.
Because it was like a lot of like spoken word stuff is very powerful, I think. And then the music you put to it was incredible as well. And I know you get asked a lot about your religious beliefs, or maybe you don't. I don't know. And I wonder if you sort of like the mystery of not fully committing one way or another. Like, it's really nobody's business what your religious beliefs are, because so many of your songs have a little bit of a religious tone to them or a connection.
Sure.
And I just wonder if you don't just sort of like, it's nobody's business what my religious beliefs are, or
no, I mean, it's, but they're fluid, you know, like mm-hmm. if you get into recovery, you know, most people who successfully stay clean have to figure out some kind of a spiritual angle mm-hmm. just as a means of getting
by.
Yeah. It's kind of about counteracting an extreme selfishness that is endemic to addiction. Mm-hmm. And the whole spiritual thing is just, it really is about just figuring out that the world is a lot bigger than you and you can't control everything.
They say that God is great. They say that God is love, and I believe them. Don't fear the random fate. I trust the hand of the Almighty and the Infinite. His truth is marching on. His truth is marching on. His truth is marching. His truth is marching on. His truth is marching on.
You know, stuck with that to the extent of doing some meditation and not really involvement with organized religion per se.
So it's not like you go to church every week,
no.
or you know, you have that, or you have a desire to want to do something like that. It's more of like a spirituality.
But I will tell you that in Memphis, Al Green is a reverend and has a church
yeah.
that he preaches at and sings at. Every Sunday.
Be an amazing
church.
So maybe, have you been, or do you want to check that out?
I have not been. I don't want to be a tourist at a church.
Good point.
You know, like, I really honestly would go to a church, more looking for a church than you know. It would be so great if I was in a church that Al Green was singing at. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
You know, but there's a sort of LGBTQ oriented Episcopalian church that I've been thinking about checking out. Just, you know, like, churches, if the people are cool, are totally great.
I am loving this interview with Mike. I hope you guys are enjoying it too. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about his time with Soul Coughing and how he feels about the band now, and more about his album that's due out in October. So I want to take just a second and tell you guys a little bit more about Up4 Probiotics. Up4 has been making probiotics since 1979. That's over 40 years of clinical research on their probiotics. If you're looking for a way to help get your gut healthy, you definitely want to check out Up4 Probiotics. Here in our house, we use the women's formula, and by we, I mean me. And then Channing uses the kids' cubes, and Chris has tried the adult formula before, and they've made a big difference in our digestive system and our overall good bacteria health. That is important. That is what probiotics do. It is what they reinforce. And if that's something that you are curious about and have always wanted to try, you can find Up4 Probiotics in your local Target store. How convenient is that, you guys? And also go to motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the Up4 Probiotics image. That will take you right to Up4, where you can find out which Up4 probiotic is right for you. I also want to talk to you guys about Lansinoh. Lansinoh has created the first Bluetooth smart pump. It's a breast pump that allows you to use the Lansinoh baby app right from your phone to track your feeding times, the amount of milk that you're pumping, all of that helpful information that you need to know when you're a new mom, when you've just had a baby and you're tired and you don't want to write all of that stuff down. The Lansinoh baby app, in conjunction with the new Lansinoh smart pump, can keep track of all of that for you. It is such a lifesaver for new moms. Go to motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the Lansinoh image, and that will take you right to their website, where you can find out more information about the new Lansinoh smart pump. Lansinoh, finally, there's a better way to pump.
So there's a music school in Memphis called Visible that I've met a number of kids from to college. And it's a it's sort of Christian oriented, like, a lot of people train to be worship leaders, and like, it's really very church oriented. Mm-hmm. And you meet like a 20-year-old coming out of there. First of all, they know what they're doing, which is incredible, because not a lot of music schools can teach actual modern contemporary songwriting.
Right.
So that's a feat in and of itself. But the other thing is, like, I really get the sense that, like, these kids don't care about the culture wars. Mm-hmm. Like, they're sort of like, you know, like, if you ask them about gay marriage, they'll be like, I don't know, maybe. But that's not what they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. They really are much more like, you know, interested in climate change and in poverty and hunger.
Social
and
just, issues.
Bigger global issues. Yeah.
Which are legitimate concerns. Those are things that I think about now. Having a daughter, I think about stuff like that all the time.
And even if they're not necessarily socially liberal to the nth degree, that's just not what they want to spend their religious life thinking about.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I know. Do you want to ask him about covers? Chris has been listening to The Gambler, like, it keeps popping, popping up on his iPod.
right. So yeah, for some reason my iPod loves The Gambler. I have it in my mix. I've got like 500 songs, and every time I start up my car, within 5 songs The Gambler plays.
There is a really odd thing about streaming services and about iTunes, which is they just like certain songs.
And it's supposed to be, there's supposed to be an algorithm that shuffles, right?
But there's just a thing where it's like, you
but
know.
But I hear the same 20 songs every time.
Yeah, it's so strange.
So the Gambler's constantly playing, and it got me thinking that you've done a lot of covers. You have an album of covers out there.
Yep.
Do you think the Circles album that you just released a few years ago, Would you consider that a covers album? Or just kind of a remixing of your originals?
Well, I mean, I was trying to look back to the songs before I brought them to Soul Coughing. Like, I was really trying to, like, mentally connect to the process of writing them before I brought it to the band, which was a collaborative band. And everything, you know, even when I brought in specific parts that I asked people to play, it was still 100% the personalities of four people.
Right.
So I was just trying to connect with, like, me, you know, alone on my roof writing songs. And it was really about, like, trying to realize the vision that I would have gone with if I was a solo artist rather than been in the band. But really it came from, I wanted to do a tour doing all Soul Coughing songs.
Okay.
I wanted to just do an all Soul Coughing song tour. And my booking agent was like, you need to put out some kind of a record.
To back up.
Yeah,
that,
like
that
as
tour.
A flyer right. for the gigs, as Mike Watt says. But I and so this was just the idea that I had, and I met this kid who goes by the name Good Goose. Brooklyn hip hop kid, super nerd, for like really like asking me questions about like, you know, what sort of compressor did you use on Tremendous Brunette? And like, I don't know. I had no idea.
I just plugged in. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly. The knobs. I wasn't really paying attention. But so I just had that partnership and I needed to do something to presage the tour. And then I did a crowdfunding campaign to do the record.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowdfunding campaign was enormously successful and way overshadowed the tour. And it was remarkable because people were just sort of being like, I'll give you $3 if you play Soul Coughing songs again. Like,
that 90s nostalgia coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, like I will buy a poster. I will put money on that. So that ended up being like the big story. And I'm proud of the record.
I stopped the thought before its trip became insistent. I rubbed it out and loved the spot where it were nesting. She's widely known, the only macro that pays her taxes. I got the box
the world needed another version of Circles. You know, there's a...
Do people yell that out at you at your shows?
Oh, gosh, yeah, of
I'm
course.
I'm sure.
But there's a couple...
Super Bon Bon!
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of songs on there. The version of Sleepless and the version of How Many Cans. Yeah. I think those are two tracks on there that I was never really happy with in Soul Coughing, and I think I really got him right this time. But like Circles and Super Bon Bon, I mean, I think the Soul Coughing versions are
pretty spot on.
Much
yeah.
better. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I had to make a record with
yeah.
those on them if I'm doing Soul Coughing songs.
Is there anything you're wanting to do a cover of? Like, is there anything, whenever you hear a new song, are you like, oh, I'd like to sing my own version of that?
Yeah, all the time. I mean... you know, it's funny. I've played a lot of cover songs in the last decade or so. Before that, I would just really sort of baldly rip things off. And you know, if you rip something off, and even if you're shameless about it, most of the time when it filters through your personality and through your style, it's just going to be different. And you know, you'll go to people and be like, "Oh, this is a version of a Journey song," and people will be like, "No, it's not, not at all,
not
even a little bit."
Do you have to get permission to do that, or do you just?
Well, I mean, there have been times when I've well, it's mostly when I use a sample that you got to go back and get permission from people. But if you're emulating something, Usually you can't even tell. Usually there's it's not like somebody would have a legal
claim
or
something. Yeah.
But I mean, certainly when it is somebody else's thing, you got to credit them and compensate.
Sure.
Yeah.
So who do you think like that's playing right now? Are there any songs out right now or even any classic songs that you're like, God, I'd love to cover that or sing a version of it?
Oh gosh. Is there anything that I'm really, I can't think of anything that I'm really like dying to,
Does that speak to the state of music right now for you? Is it because music is just so pop driven?
No, what I'm saying is like, I'm going more into a ripping off stage than a covering stage.
What are you listening to right now?
The thing I'm listening to the most is, and this sounds way more pretentious than it is.
I love it already.
Yeah. It's a psychedelic rock band from Zambia in the 70s.
Wow. Fantastic.
Called Witch. Yes. And it's it's like the best freaky classic rock you ever heard. And they've made about 60 songs in their entire career. They're all on Spotify, all on Apple Music. And it's just absolutely amazing. Witch is the name of the band.
Witch.
And there's a metal band called Witch. And this is not them. There's two bands called Witch up there. You got to make sure you got the Zambian.
The right witch.
Yeah. It just sounds so pretentious to be like, well, I'm into Zambian music from the 70s, but it's so good.
Hey, if that's what you're into, then.
I recommend anybody, like, if you like music from the late 60s, early 70s, man, it's great.
You're probably one of the only people that I've ever heard refer to themselves as an artsy hipster.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh, because out here, everyone's like, no, I'm not a hipster, but they've got the beard and the handlebar mustache and, you know, the pork pie hat. And you are, buddy. Embrace it.
I've seen every Wes Anderson movie in its opening weekend.
Yep, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. There's just no sense fighting. I like hipster stuff. I like the hipster coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, like the yoga and the bookstore.
The pour over coffee. What are you into?
Yes,
that?
I love the pour over coffee.
I love it.
It's delicious.
Yes,
it really
my
is.
Friend,
it's
my friend.
The best
$9
cup of coffee.
Yes. Yeah. My friend owns a pie shop here in LA. Mm. So if you ever get a chance to go, it's called The Pie Hole.
Oh.
And pies are all fresh. And they've just started doing coffee cupping, where you go around and you smell the coffee.
Right.
They pour the hot water in it. Then you smell it again.
Right.
And then you taste it like wine tasting. You spit it out. And I'm like, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard, but I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
And everyone's doing it. And it's like the thing.
I mean, the hipster stuff. The term's really kind of a shame. Well, for the most part, when people say hipster, they're just talking about a kid having fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, when people get mad, like, oh, he's got an ironic mustache. It's just a kid who thought it was funny. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
It's not a societal threat. They're not like, it's not like, oh, people are starving, therefore you shouldn't have a mustache. I mean, it's so weird.
Right.
To be fair, though, I've seen some kids spend way too much time on their mustache.
Yes. Yeah, but the kids, they spend way too much time on everything.
On everything, yeah.
Yeah, like no matter what it is, they would spend way too much time thinking about it.
Twirling, they're waxing. They're,
but you know, for me, it's like, look, I like those movies. I like those record stores. I will cop
embrace
to it.
I love
Absolutely.
That you embrace that about yourself, because there's so many people who deny it. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, it's not this way anymore, but because it's more of a culturally massively connoting word. But a friend of mine used to say that a hipster is someone that complains about hipsters.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If you're complaining about hipsters,
you're a hipster.
You're a hipster.
Yeah.
Like, you're that guy.
These hipsters taking over this neighborhood. You're a hipster.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any, like, who do you consider to be, like, your contemporaries in music? And is there anybody that you want to collaborate with that you haven't already? Because one of our favorite songs, while you think about it, I see your wheels turning. One of our favorite collaborations that you've done, besides with Dave Matthews, was also with BT.
Yes.
Love that song.
That's made it onto every playlist.
Every playlist. Right. And it was so much fun and just so perfect for your voice and his beats and everything.
It was
so
fabulous, yeah.
I secretly hope when we see you live that you'll whip that one out.
I know.
But you haven't yet.
We've seen you so many times and we're like, well, it's not really his song, so he can't.
True.
I mean,
it? Yeah, I think I did an acoustic version once or twice, but I wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. You know, that's kind of, I mean, like, usually when people bring up something that's a really good idea, then forget to rehearse, and I go, I'm going to do that for the next tour. But, I see him around, Brian BT, mm-hmm. And you were always like, "You should do something.
We should
again.
Do something. You totally should."
Yeah,
because the marriage of your voice, like I said, with his beats and everything was fantastic. It's like definitely on a lot of our mixtapes that we still make mix playlists or whatever
all the time.
So who are there? Is there anybody else you want to collaborate with? Or
oh gosh, I mean, there's a hip hop producer named Mike Will Made It. He's like a total mainstream hip hop producer. I'd love to do something with that guy. There's a pop songwriter who's the poppiest of all pop songwriters named Max Martin. Is every time I hear a pop song on the radio, like Katy Perry song or whomever, it's always written by that guy. And there's just something about what he does with melodies
and his hooks
that is so incredible that I would just love to do my kind of weird lyrics with his kind of like insanely genius melodies. But beyond that, there's
band. Is that hard to hook up something like that? Like, could you just call his people and go, "Hey, Mike Doty would like to work with you," and then they go, "Sure." Or is that not something you do in the music biz?
I mean, I'm like very small potatoes compared. I mean, he's like, you know, winning Grammys and you know, doing Katy Perry songs and stuff. So
I will call him. Do you want me to call him?
I will. Yeah, totally.
Pull some strings.
I have no fear about calling anybody and asking, "Hey, come on my show," or "Hey, did you like to do this?" Because the worst they can say is no.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I'm in the same place I was.
If you get Max Martin on. But beyond that, there are a lot of young bands in Memphis. There's an artist named Julian Baker who's really amazing. There's a band called Knots that are amazing. There's a band called Vas, V-A-S, which is really great. And I've actually been writing some songs periodically with their singer, Andrew Elder. And I would just love to work with them. It's funny, like I've discovered that I'm pretty good at like mentoring and, you know, working with a vocalist and getting them to, you know, sort of put their anxiety behind them and focus on their performance and give their best performance. Mm-hmm. And so I've become really good at that, and it is not a monetizable skill at all anymore.
It can be, though. You could charge for that, like a session fee
The artists that I'm interested in are in Memphis are not. It's not like it'd be like, "Hey, give me $20 and I'll show you how to sing a vocal."
I would imagine amongst artists, that's an awkward thing to do, to be like, "You need to pay me for my, but you should tell people to pay you for your talents and your services."
The world that I came up in was one where someone would get a record deal and the record company would pay you. So it wasn't like, you know, a kid that's like, "Look, you know, I know you have 3 shifts a week at Pyro's.
Yeah.
You know, like, give me half a day's
give me
pay.
$100 to..."
Yeah, I mean, if it's just like, we're really talking about like young people that are not established. Mm-hmm.
That would be hard to do, especially because you have such an artist feel about you. And I know that you want to probably share your knowledge and your experiences with younger artists. So that would be hard to try to like monetize it in some way.
Yeah. I mean, when I say monetize, it's such an awful word.
It is an awful word.
And I'm just bringing that up because I think it would be a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to teach songwriting. And there's nobody that really has sort of literary, I mean, that's not even a great word for it. But let's literary songwriting classes. There's no real programs for that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you could start one in Memphis.
I kind of would like to. I don't know how. Yeah. You know, like, what do you put up a Craigslist ad? Like,
no,
you
go. There's probably colleges and universities or junior colleges.
Knocking on the door.
Yeah, and just call up their music department and say, "Hey, would you guys be interested in having singer songwriter and legendary rock star Mike Doty?"
That's how I introduce myself. Always.
They would go, "Absolutely." Yeah. Come and teach a class. I bet they would love that.
I mean, it'd be fun. I'd love to do it.
I'll call them for you.
Good.
I also wonder. Oh, so like your contemporaries, who do you think is doing music? Like your, like who do you consider to be like in your same zone?
Oh, I mean, there's a guy named Jose Gonzalez that's a Swedish, believe it or not, singer songwriter. He's just absolutely phenomenal. He's the best in the business, as far as I'm concerned. In terms of like acoustic music guys, he's the guy that I would just love to be in his camp. Hmm. Yeah.
I also want to ask you too. So you mentioned Soul Coughing earlier. You were in Soul Coughing for 8 years.
Yes, 92 to 2000.
And yeah. You have been a solo artist now for 16 years.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Why do you think people keep introducing you as the former lead singer of Soul Coughing, or, you know, Soul Coughing's Mike Doty?
Well, because it sold a lot more records, is just one thing. Which is
just the visibility.
Which is, it's funny. I looked at some Spotify data, and people listen to roughly double as much Soul Coughing as they do to me.
Your singles.
Which,
that's so interesting.
Dude, I'm 46 and I'm on my 9th solo album. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. You know, I mean, like when you're 25 and a record company will invest, you know, man hours and treasure into developing you, and you're going to be of interest to people in college who have, you know, a network and life for finding out about music. Sure, you're always gonna sell more, not even sell more records, just affect more lives, be listened to more, and that's just fine. I mean, it's a little daunting, and it can be wearying to be sort of handed the baggage of someone's memories, to be like I'm not here to remind you of your first bong hit in sophomore year. I'm here to play a bunch of songs. But that's a fine line, because I still I don't play songs that I don't enjoy playing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because why bother? Why bother to pay money to see that? Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of Soul Coughing songs that I enjoy the hell out of playing.
That's good. I just think it's interesting that you have been a solo artist for so much long, twice as long as you were with Soul Coughing. And yet every article I read about you and every podcast that I've listened to, it has introduced you as, you know, lead singer of Soul Coughing. It's just interesting to me.
There was a time where I would have been angrier about that.
A little resentful.
I mean, it took me a long time to sort of take ownership over what I did, and that's a band that I started, and that is my brand name that I came up with, to use more disgusting words. Yeah,
but so, there's also a pride there. I mean, you created something that, you know, millions of people loved, and were a part of that. And I know it's probably, you know, it has some dark tinges for, you know, in your memories when you look back on it. But I definitely, we love Soul Coughing, and we love the music you created there. So, but I'm sure it's hard to look back and find pride in that and what you created.
It is an ongoing struggle. It's really hard when a drunk guy is telling you a story about, you know, stuff that went down in his frat.
While he was listening to Soul Coughing.
People really have these very long stories they want to tell me that are, you know, about them and their bros. And you know,
I'm not interested.
Happy to be a part of it. the nicest things that happen is I get a lot of people that use a song of mine as like the first dance at their wedding, or
Book of Love.
Play their wedding, Book of Love.
Book of Love is a big one.
Yeah, which is a cover of a Magnetic Field song.
Yeah,
I should say.
Yeah, Chris.
That's one of those instances where I think the cover is better than the original song.
Absolutely.
I like Magnetic Fields, and their version of that song has its own power.
Yes.
But I think you bring something else to
it. Your cover is so powerful.
I almost cannot process that statement, because Stephen Merritt from Magnetic Fields is, I think, like the greatest living songwriter. Yeah.
Yeah.
And going along with the stories, I have to tell you too, when you did the cover of Three's Magic Number.
Oh.
Because, you know, we're a family of three.
So when
I had, it was on my birthing mix.
Oh,
isn't that cheesy? I know that's like TMI maybe, but it was on my birthing mix, and I remember listening to it after I'd had my daughter, just being like, whoa, three is a magic number, because we are three. You know, it was just, it's so sweet, and it's way better than the original.
I mean, if you're younger than we are, you might not know that it was created to be as a math lesson in a cartoon between Saturday morning
other cartoons.
It was like not Sesame Street, but one
Schoolhouse
of the Schoolhouse Rock.
And it was a song called Three is a Magic Number, and some of the songs written for that are so beautiful.
A man and a woman had a little baby.
Yes, they did. They had three in the family, but that's the magic number. Three times 10 is 30. Three times 9 is 27. Three times 8 is 24. Three times 7 is 21. Three times 6 is 18. Three times 5 is 15. Three times 4 is 12. Three times 3 is 9. And three times 2 is 6. And three times 1 is 3, of course.
When people come up to you and they tell you what their favorite song is, because I'm sure you get that a lot, where people are like, oh my God, I love this song.
Yeah.
Do you form your opinions on them based on what they say their song is? So like if somebody comes up to you and is like, Super Bon Bon is my favorite. Or if somebody comes up and goes, my favorite song is Wednesday, you know, do you instantly in your mind go, all right, this person is this way?
Well, you know, I actually, it's interesting you say Wednesday. I really like it when people like that song. Yeah,
that's my favorite song. That's why I picked that.
I know.
That is literally one of my favorites that you sing.
That's a song that I identify very closely with. That.
Yes.
White Lexus.
Yeah.
Rising Signs, another one. Yep. But it's not a question of like, you know, like, oh, you like the popular song and you like the obscure song. Because that, believe me, they're like dudes out there. Who will bring up the most obscure Japanese outtake.
And you're like, how did you even...
Stuff I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they'll yell it out at the show, and I'll be like, dude, I have no idea. But, I mean, sometimes when somebody brings up a song that is intense for me, that it's not that I judge them on it, it's just like a moving, bonding experience.
Boats moored in the water, the green waves are rolling at the shore. I love to see them reaching, I just want to stay this joyous hour. Your sorrow is beautiful to me tonight, so cold and bright.
Which is, by the way, it's meant to be poorly pronounced Spanish.
Oh.
Yeah, the character in the song.
Yeah.
Because he says it with like a completely flat American accent.
Right.
Spanish speakers write to me like, you know, I'm going to teach you how to say that. I'm like, I'm sorry. I should have like made it clear that it's supposed to be a character in a song who doesn't speak Spanish well.
Can I play some of your songs in this podcast?
Of course you can. Yeah.
I may like go in and when I'm editing it, kind of sprinkle in some songs.
As you should, as I would like you to.
Just because I would love for everybody listening to become as passionate of fans as we are.
Dude, all the
moms and dads out there, everybody who's listening, all my actor friends.
All the broke actor friends.
All the broke actor friends. did you have any last minute questions? Or
just one. You're very active on social media.
Yeah.
Pretty active.
Yeah.
Recently, this was weeks or months back, you retweeted something from a fan that I'm going to do badly at paraphrasing right now, but he tweeted something to the effect of, if you want to look at the future of indie music, look at Mike Doty's career right now.
It was some blogger of note, and I was just very flattered, which is why I retweeted it.
How do you feel about it? Because you're clearly doing something different than a lot of quote-unquote indie bands and whatnot. I mean, you are doing kind of this grassroots tour. You're, you know, very prolific in your songwriting and your albums.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that categorization of, like... progressing the indie rock movement, if you want to say that?
I would say two things. The first of all is I'm just a hustler trying to survive, and it is a very unfriendly economy for musicians right now, which I think mostly has to do with just the size of the music business, it being like this incredibly diminished business. I think I don't think streaming services pay enough, but I'm not going to lay the blame on them. I mm-hmm. think if the music business was, again, a $15 billion business, then people like me on the lower end of the food chain would be able to make a living as, you know, as a producer, mentoring young artists, that kind of stuff. But most of that stuff just comes from, like, how can I make a living if I'm not going to get a royalty check? I'm not going to get an advance for my next record. But a part of that is I've just, like, I came up in New York, late 80s, early 90s, when there was just a lot of weird performance art things going on. Mm-hmm. And I just always thought that stuff was fascinating.
And like, you could tell, too, in your music. You could tell you and like that kind of stuff.
I love that kind of stuff. And I, it's a kind of a great time if you're into that kind of thing. Because, like, I remember, I don't know, like 15 years ago, like, I called my manager and was like, okay, so what I want is to build a house in South Dakota, mm-hmm. like a tiny house, and only play shows there for like a year. And anyone could come. And it's like, it was like, there's no way I'm going to find money for that. But now you go to somebody and say that, they're like, ooh, son, tell me more.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, because there's no, because, you know, everyone's so desperate for money and ideas that people something take ideas here. So if I say something like, I want to do a song that I only record on Sony dictation devices, and if you want a copy of it, you have to buy a dictation device, and mm-hmm. I will sing it in there. People are like, great, cool, let's set up a web page. Let's figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there was a time when people would have been just like, no, do another album.
Are you thinking long-term now after, because your album's coming out, I want to remind everybody, October 14th, The Heart Watches While the Brain Burns is coming out October 14th. Are you going to continue doing the Living Room Tour when that album comes out? Or are you kind of wrapping that up and going to look for a different type of tour with this next album?
I'm going to do I'm going to do a tour in October, November, just doing radio stations, playing record stores,
great,
pushing the album. But then I'm working on a full U.S. tour in January, February, and March of 2017 with a band.
Oh,
so
great.
I'm going to put out the record, let it be out for a little while, let people hear that stuff. And then I'm going to go out and do like a full band tour, which I'm really excited about.
Will Scrap be in the mix?
Scrap will definitely be in the mix. I'm trying to like employ some of that sort of face call stuff, the hand signal stuff, and figure out how to do it within the context of like the Doty show. So mm-hmm. it's more, it kind of adds a dynamic. It's not, there's no way you can describe it without it sounding incredibly pretentious, but it really is just a way of,
I think it sounds interesting. I don't think it sounds pretentious at all. I think it sounds interesting and different, and I love that.
It really is, but you know, I mean, if you come see it, it's like, oh, that's cool, but if you're like, well, it's a series of hand gestures meant to control the volume of the music based on a piece by John Zorn.
Like, will you be serving pour over coffee?
I know, yeah. And I sure would be if I could, believe
because
me.
Because then it would be like hipster, pretentious. It would just be all of the amazing things.
I have to tell you, I'm friends with Sam Sifton, who mm-hmm. is a writer for the New York Times and used to run their food section, their dining section. And he does a Thanksgiving dinner every year that is legendary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he is like, I think he wrote a book about it. But just like having access to Sam Sifton's Thanksgiving is one of the most amazing things, and I've never been able to contribute. And one of these years, I want to be like, let me do the pour over coffee.
Yes!
Let me be, because I will rock it. I will be like, what do you want? You want Guatemalan? You want aroma? What do you want?
Yeah.
And you know, like a condensed milk. What kind of milk you want? What do you? Yeah.
Well, maybe one day he will actually let you do that. And I want to. Thank you so much.
Dude, this is so much
for
fun.
Coming definitely, by and being on my little podcast. This has been such a thrill for us.
Well, people should know that we are in like a sunlit dining room at a nice wooden dining table. There's flowers and candles and windows, so we feel like we're connected to the world.
Yeah.
And it's really like,
we like having the light for sure. It just seems more welcoming and inviting, and that's what we're trying to achieve. We wanted you to feel welcome, so I'm so glad you're here. And before we go, I want to tell everybody, I'm going to put information up about your new album on my website, as well as where they can find some of your previous albums. I'm going to assume the next time you come back to LA that we're friends and we're all just going to hang out. We're going to go. We'll go to Stumptown Coffee and we'll try their try their pour overs and, and do a cupping and stuff like that. Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And thank you guys. And Chris, thank you
for
being on my podcast.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Yay. Mazel tov.
This was so much fun. Make sure you guys follow me on Twitter at MIH Podcast and at Heather Brooker. Also, follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motherhood in Hollywood. And also, don't forget to go to motherhoodinhollywood.com to keep up with the latest happenings and shenanigans in my world. Have a great day, everybody. Great week. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye. Lord, Lord, help me just to rock, rock on. Lord, Lord, help me just to rock, rock on.
Balls.